From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, North America's number one rated late night talk show. Good to have you with us. Later on tonight, stories of high strangeness with Linda Moulton Howe, followed by conversations with Linda. Here is what's happening. After he shot two journalists on live television, and before he then shot himself, Bryce Williams, that's his air name, sent a message. Simply said, "I've been a human powder keg for a while, just waiting to go boom." Those were the words the gunman wrote in a chilling fax to ABC News, according to the network. The document, purportedly from the Virginia shooter, came after he gunned down WDBJ TV journalist Allison Parker and her camera person Adam Ward, spurning a manhunt that ended when he turned a gun on himself as troopers simply closed in. What causes someone to do this? Dr. Peter Breggin, of course, author of Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and also our resident psychiatrist, we turn to him on all kinds of issues like this. Peter, I want you as quickly, I guess, as you can to analyze this situation. There were signs that this person had some problems, but my God, did anybody see murder in this picture? Peter, you with us? Nope, there is no Peter Breggin. Well, let me tell you what Peter was going to tell you, of course, that these people are highly, highly suspect. They might be on medication there's a severe problem with issues like that. And in this particular case, everybody knew this individual had some issues. Everybody. Nobody really knew he'd come back to do what he did. Walmart, by the way, will stop selling the AR-15 rifle and other semi-automatic weapons at its stores because fewer people apparently are buying them. The AR-15 rifles and other modern sporting rifles were being sold at less than a third of the company's 4,600 U.S. stores. Walmart stores will remove the remaining inventory as the stores transitions from the summer to fall merchandise, which could take a week or two to complete. In a moment, John Lott will join us talking about this issue and some other stories related to guns. In Puerto Rico, government leaders ordered schools, airports, and even casinos to close, and they prepared shelters as Tropical Storm Erica approached the eastern Caribbean. The storm was located about 155 miles east of Antigua and was moving west at about 17 miles an hour. Right now, the maximum sustained speed is 45 miles an hour. The storm not expected to strengthen, and that is pretty good so far. A new study by the University of Birmingham revealed that obese adults who preloaded with 500 milliliters of plain tap water, that means drinking a lot of water, lost an average of 9.5 pounds in 12 weeks. They say, just drink a pint of water before meals. That's the secret to losing weight. After several volatile days with huge swings in both directions, the Dow finished Thursday up 369 points. This is another rally. It's two-day point gain for the Dow, is surpassing the previous record set in 2008. It's weird. I mean, everybody we talk to say that the Dow is going to crash, and though it did have that problem for several days, it seems to be zooming again. Who knows? Contracts to buy previously owned U.S. homes rose less than expected in July, but still continue to suggest upward momentum in the housing market recovery. A newborn baby has died after being bitten by rats in an Indian hospital. I'm not going to go into the gory details of what happened, but they really need to fix things in that place. Our highlight story at coasttocoastam.com, a unicorn woman in China is set to have the horn removed. Her family's a little concerned. This thing is huge. It's huge. They have no idea. Doctors are baffled why she's sprouting this horn, but her family is afraid that if they take it off, she could die. Strange things happening all over the place. And we will be back in a moment with John Lott as we talk about all kinds of issues that have to do with guns on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, I wanted to say the firefighters are holding their own against huge wildfires in the state of Washington. And, you know, these fires are just a disaster. And so it's important to have a great communication system, and radio is the way to go, let me tell you. The CZ Radio 2E happens to be the best AM and FM radio out there for all kinds of hazards. The 2E can help you stay connected when all communication fails. The 2E is a very reliable emergency radio. The NOAA weather band and the weather alert, the 2-meter ham band where you can listen to local ham operators that help coordinate emergency efforts. And the CZ Radio 2E is also designed to receive long-range AM and FM reception. Now, how do you get this incredible radio? Well, it's easy. You simply go to ccrane.com, or call them now, or call them tomorrow. But just call them at 1-800-522-8863. Use that number again, 1-800-522-8863. Now, we've been talking about the stories of guns, Walmart pulling some certain guns off the shelves. John Lott, of course, president of the newly formed Crime Prevention Research Center. He is an expert on guns. He's written books called More Guns, Less Crime, The Bias Against Guns. This hour, we're going to talk with John about these situations. First of all, John, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's great to talk to you again, George.
So Walmart is pulling certain kinds of guns off its shelves. They say it's because they're not selling and that there's nothing political about it. Do you have any more information on this, John, or is this the case?
Well, I mean, I don't know what Walmart sales are in particular, but I can tell you that guns overall are still selling very well. The sales of guns generally are still about twice as much as they were in 2007. The industry as a whole seems to be doing fairly well right now. So my own belief is that there's a fair amount of politics in this, that Walmart obviously has been a target of a lot of liberal politicians, particularly over the last few years. And maybe they think on this and some other issues, they can buy some political goodwill. This notion that somehow, you know, they're banning so-called assault weapons. I mean, you and I both know that's pretty much a made-up term. They want to keep on selling hunting rifles, semi-automatic hunting rifles, but these AR-15s, the inside guts of an AR-15 is the equivalent of a relatively low-caliber semi-automatic hunting rifle. You can't even use an AR-15 to go and hunt deer in most states in the United States because the bullet isn't sufficiently large to ensure that you'll go and kill the animal. They're worried that with a small caliber bullet like the AR-15, you're more likely to just wound the animal and have it run away. And so, both guns fire one bullet per pull of the trigger. They both, if you have the same size caliber for, a small caliber hunting rifle or the AR-15, they're both going to do the same damage. They can both have magazines that can hold the same number of bullets. The only difference is cosmetic features on the outside. The AR-15 looks like an M16. Some people apparently like to have guns that remind them of military weapons, even though no self-respecting military in the world would use the civilian AR-15 in its military arsenal.
So I was in Toronto last weekend at my live stage show event, John, and one of my guests, Alex Jones, who's got his own program and is an incredible activist. And we were talking about guns on the stage. And, most Canadians in the audience were very supportive of what Alex and I were talking about. There was one individual, however, stood up during our question and answer session and just went absolutely ballistic over guns. And he was saying, take your guns and get back to the United States and da-da-da-da-da. And Alex stood up and, he was asked the question, and Alex simply said, look, it's not the guns who are killing people. It's these sick individuals who are out there doing what they're doing. Are we, and as you know, I'm a concealed weapons permit holder and I've been a supporter of the Second Amendment. Are we doing enough to test guns to pull, you know, to keep them out of the hands of people who are a little imbalanced. This individual, of course, who killed the television reporter and the camera person and wounded the guest. I mean, I don't know how he got his gun, whether he bought it legally or not.
He did.
We've known this.
I mean, first of all, I just want to respond to the specific point that Alex Jones made, and that is, I disagree with the way he said it. I think it's important to acknowledge that guns do make it easier to kill people. This notion that guns don't kill people, people kill people, I just don't think that that's very credible to most people. The way I would phrase it is, sure, guns make it easier to kill people, but they also make it easier for people to protect themselves and prevent bad things from happening. And the question is, what's the net effect that's going to happen there? And I think the evidence is very strong that when you go and you try to regulate guns or ban them, you mainly affect law-abiding good citizens and disarm them and end up making it relatively easier for criminals to go and do the attack. The criminals like to go after victims that they perceive of as relatively weak, and a gun is particularly effective for those people who are the most vulnerable victims to be able to go and defend themselves, whether it be women or the elderly or people who live in high-crime urban districts, you know, poor blacks who are most likely to be victims of crime. Those are the people who benefit the most from having a gun. If you have multiple attackers going after somebody, it's not really clear, other than having a gun, what could possibly make those people safer. So I think it's wrong to make the argument that he made. But putting that aside and getting to the rest of your comment there, these issues of mental illness are a lot more difficult to go and detect than people seem to think. You know, Monday morning quarterbacking is easy, you know, to go and see, well, people should have seen something. But here's the problem. If you look at mass public shootings in the United States, a little bit over 50% of all the mass public shooters were actually seeing psychiatrists or psychologists before they did the attack. And yet, in not one case did the psychiatrist or psychologist believe that that individual was a danger to other people. And there's a whole literature in psychiatry on how difficult it is for psychiatrists to go and figure out whether somebody's likely to go and do an attack. These are rare events. And, you know, I'll give you an example. You look at schizophrenics, for example. You're talking about thousands of one percentage point of schizophrenics who are ever violent towards other people. You know, that's incredibly tiny percentage there. And they just don't have the ability or the skills to be able to go and find out very accurately who that individual is going to be. And even among that thousands of 1%, not all those are going to go and do some mass shooting. You're talking about even a tiny, tiny percentage of those. And so, people, it's easy to go and say, well, the signs should have been obvious. But, you know, surely, you know, workers who have hot tempers or get angry from time to time. I assume people wouldn't want to turn in everybody who kind of gets into an argument with somebody else at their office. Trying to figure out when somebody's getting into an argument and when it goes over the line. Now, do I wish it was possible to go and identify these people? Do I wish that psychiatrists and psychologists were able to go and easily identify people who posed a threat to others? Of course, anybody would want to wish something like that could happen. But, I think a little bit of humility on the part of, one just has to go and read the academic literature by these psychiatrists and psychologists just to see the soul searching that they go through for not being able to go and identify these bias. Here, if a psychiatrist, they have legal obligations. If they think that somebody is actually a danger to others and they don't report that individual to the police, they're going to get sued. You know, if the person does some type of damage, they're going to face, really large financial penalties. They may lose their license. There are other things that can happen there. So it's not like these guys not only you would like to believe have a kind of a personal belief mm-hmm. that they should do the right thing to save lives. I think virtually anybody in that type of job would want to do the right thing if they thought somebody was really a danger to others, but they have a financial and professional responsibility to go and do the same thing too. And yet, despite all those things, despite kind of all that pressure to go and do the right thing, they're not very good at guessing who's the risk.
I would have liked to have heard Dr. Peter Bragan for a moment. We had some massive phone issues that literally right. just shut down, so we lost Peter Bragan, I lost another guest, Peter Davenport, who was going to give us his weekly update on UFOs. But let me ask you this, as the devil's advocate. If we had banned all guns in terms of ownership for individuals, would we eliminate all these kinds of crimes, or would they still, one, find the guns to do it, and then, two, would the criminal still find guns to do what they're going to do?
You ask excellent questions here. Look, there are different ways we can break this down. One is just to see places that have banned guns. What's happened to crime rates? Have crime rates fallen? Have they gone to zero or something? And it couldn't be further from the truth. Every place in the world that's banned guns, either all guns or all handguns, has seen big increases in murder rates and violent crimes. Americans are familiar with what happened in Chicago when they had their handgun ban, or in Washington, D.C., when they had their handgun ban. But somehow we think that this is unique because, well, you know, gun control proponents will say, well, unless you ban guns, every place in the country, criminals will go and get guns from Maryland to Virginia or from the rest of Illinois. And so, you know, it's not a fair test. But that doesn't explain why the murder rates go up as much as they did. It may explain why it didn't go down like they promised it was going to go down. But we have experiments in island nations. We have places like Jamaica or Ireland or the UK, which have had gun bans or handgun bans. And you see big increases in murder rates that start right after the bans go into effect. You know, even the UK, in the 8 years after it had its handgun ban in January 1997, it experienced about a 50% increase in firearm murders. You know, you look at Jamaica and Ireland, they had like 6, 7, 8-fold increases in murder rates that started right after their gun bans went into effect. And here's the problem. When you pass one of these bans, and this is true for gun control laws generally, you have to ask who's most likely to obey the law. And what you have happening is it's the most law-abiding good citizens who end up obeying these things, not the criminals. And to the extent that you disarm law-abiding good citizens relative to criminals, you actually see increases in crime. And there's a second part of an answer to your question, too, and that is we know in this case, this killer in Virginia, he apparently has been playing this for 2.5 months. Now, let's say we had been able to ban him from buying guns. How, just as a thought experiment, how hard do you think it would be for him to buy illegal drugs? You know, I don't think most people would find it that hard to go and buy illegal drugs.
No, not at all. Well, they could always find them.
Right. And the thing is, the drug gangs that go and sell these drugs, who do you think has guns to protect their valuable property? They do. And so, you know, the notion that somehow it's going to be a lot harder for people to go and buy illegal guns than it was for them to go and buy illegal drugs, it just seems obvious to me. You know, if tomorrow you could click your fingers and cause all illegal drugs to disappear from the country and all guns to disappear, how long do you think it would take before illegal drugs would start coming back in the U.S.? Hours?
Exactly. Probably minutes.
Right. And how long do you think it would take for them to bring in the weapons that they would want to have to protect that extremely valuable property? It's not like they can go and call up the police and say, this other gang stole our drugs. Can you help us get them back? They have to set up their own militaries and own people with guns, guards, to go and protect what can be worth millions and millions of dollars. You know, they're just not going to let it sit around when the people who want to go and steal their drugs are going to have an incentive to bring in guns in order to try to take their valuable property away.
And I think one of the major issues, too, John, is I think family members need to be aware of situations, and they've got to help school this. I mean, somebody somewhere should have gone to the police and said, look, our relative, our brother, our cousin, whoever, he's got a gun, and he's really not happy. He's frustrated. He's argumentative. He's threatening. He's got a gun. Somebody needs to do something. Would police act on something like that?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, police would act on that, and you can have somebody involuntarily committed. You can go to court and have that done. People do those types of things. But again, you know, you got to be careful with this. I remember the Santa Barbara killer last summer. This guy was being seen by three psychiatrists,
yes.
One of them a nationally recognized expert. In psychiatry, particularly with, young people. He was
Hold on for a second, John. Hold on. We're at the break, and we're going to come back. We'll pick that up. And in the final half hour with you, let's take some phone calls. I'm sure people have all kinds of feelings about this. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Lott with us for the rest of this hour as we take your calls, as we talk about and react to issues that are happening around this country with guns. John, with the case of the Santa Barbara shooter, you know, he had posted himself on YouTube different videos that caused the family to be alarmed, and they reacted. They called the sheriff's department, and the sheriff's department felt that they didn't have cause or good reason to do anything about it.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't think it was the posts or YouTube that got the family involved. It was other comments and interactions that they had had. But, you know, this guy wasn't an idiot. Unfortunately, even if he was mentally unhinged, and he knew what to go and tell the police officers so as to allay their fears.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, if you read his diary, he knew what to go and tell the psychiatrists that were treating him. You know, the psychiatrists heard what the parent said. The psychiatrist could have moved to have the person involuntarily committed, the killer there. But they, after spending a great deal of time with him over a number of years, did not think that he posed a danger to other individuals. Obviously, they were mistaken. Obviously, it's something that I'm sure they regret and wish that they had to do over again. But, despite concerns from the family, neither the psychiatrist nor the police there felt that they had evidence that he was a danger to others or himself.
And, John, because so many of these six sick individuals are posting things on Twitter, right, or YouTube, I mean, are we going to have a call for the abolishing of social networks now, too?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, if somebody... Look, here's the problem with this guy posting, and that is he knew what he needed to do in order to get attention for this. My concern is that, and I fear, that people who engage in these types of attacks say, geez, if I can take a movie of the attack that I do, then it will be viral. And so you just get, I mean, you and I have talked many times about how explicitly these killers talk about their goal is getting as much publicity as possible. And here they see, all they have to do is take a video of it, and it just, you know, multiplies the interest in their story because the media loves movies,
yes,
about things that are happening. And so my fear is that this guy, and for multiple reasons, one, that he taped it, that you're going to see copycats of people taping these things. And two, I fear for the media. Because, you know, it's only natural that the media, wants to cover a story that involves them. My guess is they cover this more than they would cover if it was at some other type of business that had occurred, you know, a cement mixing factory,
mm-hmm,
or the post office or something like that. And so it's understandable, but hopefully the one thing that the media people understand is that the more attention that they give to this, the more they may encourage other people to attack media places in the future, because that's what these guys crave. They want to commit suicide, but they want to commit suicide in a way that's going to get them as much attention as possible.
Well, that's true. Unfortunately, it's a huge story. I mean, it's not every day.
Well, television, I'm not telling you not to cover it. I'm just telling you, those are some of my concerns that happen here.
They're justified.
I'm not arguing we should get rid of the First Amendment or anything like that.
No, I know. I know what you're saying. It's a catch 22, John, because, you know, on one hand, if you don't publicize it, maybe you don't have the copycat wackos do what they're going to do. On the other hand, oh my God, how many times is a television person shot to death live when they're on camera? So it's not an easy call, is it?
No, I mean, I understand why they cover it. I understand why they cover it as much as they do. And it's surely a gripping story. All I'm saying is that covering it that extensively and letting other people out there who want to get attention see how much attention this gets can have consequences.
Let's go to the phones. They're lining up for you. We'll go to Kankakee, Illinois, to get things started on our wild card line. Jason, good morning, and you are on the air with us.
Hi, thanks. Nice talking with you guys.
You too.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Basically what I was going to mention, you guys were talking about the possible ban of firearms, and I was thinking along the lines of the Prohibition era, mm-hmm. and we've seen what happened with that. I mean, we see what it's like for, like, drugs, say, right now. We pretty much ban those, but that's a huge industry. What do you think is going to happen, you know, if we ban firearms?
Well, Jason, you're correct. And, John, you know, we've discussed this over the many times you've been on the program.
Right.
And I am convinced, as you are too, that if you ban guns from the good people, the bad people will still get them.
Right. And you'll see increases in crime. I agree. You know, my own, let me take it in a slightly different direction since we have talked about that before. And that is, I don't think absent... I mean, if the Democrats win the presidency again, there's a good chance that you'll have the Second Amendment-type decisions overturned by the Supreme Court. The two decisions that they have that struck down gun bans were 5-4 decisions. Both two of those five justices in those decisions are going to be over 80 years of age by the end of the Obama administration.
That's right.
And they're not going to make it another 4 or 8 years if one or both of those individuals are replaced by somebody who's similar to the four liberal judges, justices on the court, you'll see a change in those rulings. Now, I think as long as that restriction's still in place, what you see happening is they know they can't ban it, so what they do is they impose taxes and fees mm-hmm. on people being able to go and get guns. So in Maryland now, to register and license handguns is like $300. In Illinois, where the caller is from, they were the last state to have concealed carry because they were essentially forced to do it by an appeals court there, but they did it grudgingly. And so in order to get a permit in Illinois, it costs you at least $500 to go through the process.
And you don't have reciprocity. In Illinois, right. there's no reciprocity where, you know, states here from Missouri, if you can carry in Missouri, you can't carry in Illinois.
Right. No, exactly. But the thing is, $500 plus cost just to get a permit, you know, it won't stop maybe you or me from being able to go and get a permit in that situation. But you're talking about poor blacks who live in high-crime urban areas, they're essentially priced out of it. You know, in Maryland, with $300 to license and registration for a handgun, you know, here you have people that live in Baltimore where the police are told to stand down when there are riots occurring in those poor parts of the city. And these people are essentially priced out of being able to have a gun to go and protect themselves. So you basically, if you look across the country, both federally, the bills that President Obama wants to push, as well as what we see being pushed at the state level, involve taxes and fees on people obtaining guns. And I think it's kind of their indirect way of accomplishing a ban. They know they can't outright ban it, but they know if they can tax it enough, then a lot of individuals are not going to get a gun. I'll just give you one other example on this. When Colorado in 2013 passed its expanded background checks, they have a state tax now when you transfer a gun. And I actually was involved in this. I had the idea of having an amendment put up that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the state tax. Well, the Republicans put up that amendment in the state legislature. And with the exception of two pro-gun Democrats, every single one of the Democrats in the state house there voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay that tax. In Maryland, when they were talking about this $300 plus cost to license and register guns there, there was an attempt to have a similar amendment there that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay those fees. But since the Democrats control two-thirds of both the state house and the state senate, they were able to prevent the amendments from even coming up for a vote. I mean, how many taxes do you know of that Democrats would vote unanimously or virtually unanimously against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to New York City. We're going to talk with a policeman. Joel is with us. Joel, thanks for serving, by the way. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, but people don't realize that we're at the front line here. We see the things every day that go on. You know, taking away guns, especially for the people that want to protect themselves, that is absolutely the wrong way to go. If a criminal wants to commit a crime, he will use anything, and I mean anything, a knife, a bat, whatever it takes. Yep. Just look at the jails. They're filled with criminals that don't have any weapons. They'll look at the amount of weapons that you find in there. And these are all concealable weapons that you can carry anywhere at any given time and commit the acts that you want to commit, because you're in a position that you want something, you'll take it. So if you're a criminal-minded person, you're going to do whatever it takes. So even if you've got a psychological problem, if they want to commit crimes, they'll do anything. I mean, you can use anything around you. You walk down the street, you can find objects and use them if you want to commit a crime. So look at all the cities out there that have a high crime areas. So, and they have the most strictest laws. It does not work. You know what? If the politicians are easy, they can easily say, well, you know what, let's ban this, let's ban that. Well, they will very well protected by police and Secret Service, so they have nothing to worry about. They live behind white picket fences, and then they just try to tell us how to live our lives. Now, you want to ban weapons, you want to tax them to the extreme, but you're not going to have people carrying guns. You're going to have a war on the streets that you try to take the Second Amendment for these people out here. They're going to look at it, well, you know what, it's either you or my family. You take my gun away, and I have to live in this area where it's infested with animals that want to kill me and my family. I'm going to hide my guns, and when the time comes, you know what? I'd rather be judged by 12 than being carried by 6.
That's what they say. That's what they say.
No, I think it's excellent comments by the officer there. Look, I mean, I was chief economist of the U.S. Sentencing Commission for a period of time, and I must have read thousands of court cases. And the thing that just comes out after you time after time is how these criminals pick what they view as easy targets. I mean, it's not just the fact that they can go and get weapons, as the officer correctly says, but they also like to pick easy targets, you know, so they know that maybe the drug dealer down the street has a lot of money, but they know the guy has a lot of guns, and so they're not going to go after him. But if they see, an elderly person or a woman or somebody who looks small in stature walking, you know, in a parking lot days late at night, those are the people that they go after because, you know, they want to have an easy job, just like anybody else. They don't want to make jobs more difficult than they have to or riskier.
And these signs that I see on some buildings, John, just drive me nuts. They say, you know, this is a gun-free zone.
Right.
That's like advertising to a criminal, come on in, nobody's armed.
Right. No, I mean, you know, I agree completely with you. I've debated, I don't know how many people over the years, and I've never run into anybody who would be willing to put up a sign like that on their own home. You know, they know.
Why don't you stick a sign up there that says, we do not have a security system in this house. Just put that sign out in front of your house.
Right. And, you know, as if the criminal is going to say, geez, I can't take a gun into this house. Geez, I just can't break in now. And so, you know, even though they're representing a gun control point of view, they know with the people I debate that it wouldn't be credible to the audience that they're in front of to go and say, oh, yeah, sure, I'd put up a sign like that. And the thing is, if you're not willing to put up a sign like that in front of your own home, why are you putting up these signs in other places? You know, why does that make you feel safer in these other places? It works in the exact same way. Look,
yeah,
these gun ban areas in right to carry states are relatively small areas. And yet, if you look at these mass public shootings, it's like a magnet for those. That's where all these take place. And I could give you cases just over the last year. We mentioned the Santa Barbara killer. If you read his manifesto, there were venues that he was thinking about attacking, but whether it was police or other security there, he was worried that people with guns would stop him. You look at the Canadian mass public shooter last summer. He had his Facebook page where he had comics up making fun of gun-free zones. One of the comics that he had up had a victim stumbling, trying to run away from a killer there. And he turns to the killer and he says, look, guns are banned here. You're not allowed to have a gun. It's illegal for you to shoot me. And the guy basically has a little bubble above his head, the killer does, thinking what a moron, apparently right yeah. before he kills the person there. But you look this up this year, the Charleston case, the guy's original target was supposed to be Charleston College, but he decided against that because he was worried that they had armed police there mm-hmm. at the college that would stop him. And I could go on and on. I mean, it's the diary that just came out from James Holmes, the Batman movie theater killer. In his diary, he originally was thinking about going after the Denver airport, but he turned down that as an idea because he was worried that there was too much armed security there that would stop him.
And he's right. Now, the illicit gun manufacturing business is also huge, John, where in certain countries they are manufacturing guns without serial numbers, and then they're importing them into the United States and other areas through their mules, and they're making a fortune doing this.
Right. Well, the United States is relatively unique in terms of requiring serial numbers on our guns. So, you know, the guns made in most of the world, unless they're being made for export to the United States, don't have serial numbers on them. So it's not, you know, whether it's illegally made guns or guns that are made otherwise in those countries, if they're smuggled in, they're not going to have the serial numbers on them. But look, I mean, I agree with you. Guns are fairly easy things to go and make. You know, we talk about things like magazines, you know, and the size of the magazines. Magazines are trivially easy things to make. They're a box with a spring in it, and they can be made out of metal or they can be made out of plastic or other things. I mean, with 3D printing right now, you can basically make any part of the gun. You may need not a plastic printer when it comes to the barrel, for example, of the gun. You'd rather have one of these metal printers or just buy the barrel separately there. And maybe a couple other little metal parts like the firing pin and a couple other things. But, this notion that somehow you're going to be able to keep criminals even now from getting guns or even in 20 years ago wasn't serious. But it's becoming more and more difficult, more and more impossible to keep people from just being able to go and produce a gun that would be looks and functionally identical to any gun that you could go and buy in a store.
The technology is unbelievable. John, we're quickly running out of time here. So many people still on hold to chat with you. We've got to do this with a little more time next time for you. And, of course, John Lott's website and blog linked up at coasttocoastam.com. John, thanks for being on the program. I really appreciate it.
People, John, if they want to go to our main website, it's crimeresearch.org. crimeresearch.org.
Super. We've got a link there for you too as well. Super. Okay, and I apologize for not being able to get Dr. Peter Breggin and Peter Davenport on when our phone lines just blew up literally. So we've got our staff checking on that. Now, in a moment, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some stories of high strangeness for the next 3 hours. The last hour, of course, conversations with Linda. So we shall be right back with her.